The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi, David Pollock with you. If you enjoy the podcast, you can always subscribe, rate, and review. We love the feedback. It only makes us better. And plenty to talk about. Pollock's going to break down the New Year's Six matchups, some of the things that stand out, how to fix the playoff moving forward. If you have a gripe with four teams, Pollock has a solution. And we have to find a way to get Army football in. As we tape this, they still don't have a destination in the postseason at 9-2. The Black Knights deserve a bowl game. Fingers crossed that that changes in the next couple of days as they continue to practice after a fantastic season. But first, let's break down what we saw on Sunday, what we heard on Sunday, and what it looks like when it comes to the playoff matchups. All right, we had a little drama for that fourth and final playoff spot between Notre Dame and Texas A&M. And before we get into any of the layers, David, did the committee get it right Sunday?
Sure. Yeah, I'll say yes by using their logic. And, you know, listen, first of all, there's 13. Okay, for example, Kevin, we're in the room the other day and we're doing the reveal ranking show. First day with my new mouth. Sorry about that. And we're sitting there with me, Joey, Kirk, Jesse, Reese, and Herbie. And we're just sitting there. And guess what? Our opinions aren't the same. We all follow the sport. We all watch it. But that's just six guys sitting around a table that don't have the same opinions and views of certain teams. So there is no right answer. Like, to me, there is no, you know, concrete answer. And when I look at the four spot, the difference between A&M and Notre Dame, first of all, Notre Dame played 11 games. We have to point to that, right? And when you look at A&M, they played 9. They were 8-1. So Notre Dame played more games. Notre Dame had more wins over ranked teams. You know, if you look at A&M's win over Florida, huge win. A&M's next best win is Auburn. You know, you got North Carolina, which was a great win, and Clemson, which was a great win. Obviously, without Trevor Lawrence, I don't know how Clemson's not a top four team without Trevor Lawrence, so you'd knock that down a little bit. So I think it's body of work. It's not just that last game that you saw, and I'm okay with Notre Dame being in. If A&M was in, I wouldn't be crushed if you thought A&M's a better team, because honestly, I think Notre Dame and A&M are very similar football teams.
No doubt.
Like, I think they have great offensive lines. They have playmakers at quarterback. But by the way, they're not the greatest throwing quarterbacks, but they can make things happen with their legs. Both defenses are really, really solid. I think A&M's defensive line's better. I think Notre Dame's linebackers are better. I think both secondaries are okay. So, I mean, we could literally go down the list. And, you know, to me, the difference between those two teams, I think Ian Book is a better playmaker than Kellen Mond is. So, I'm okay with Notre Dame being 4. And if I had to vote and I had to do my own ballot, I would put Notre Dame at 4.
And then the argument from the other side with Aggie fans will say, well, Kellen Mond's had one turnover since October 17th, right? He's done a really good job of protecting the ball. But I'm with you. They are mirror images of each other. And were you guys talking about this on Sunday around the roundtable? That if – I think you guys got it immediately, and I thought that was really cool, that if Notre Dame played A&M on a neutral field, it would be a pick'em game. I think that was what Reese said, and I was like, ooh, that'd be fascinating to see, and let's just duke it out right now this coming weekend before we get into the semifinal. Of course we can't do that.
That would be awesome.
Now, here's the thing, though. You bring up some points here from the committee going by the criteria, and you mentioned body of work. And then I'm hearing in the back of Jim Fisher saying, well, we've played a lot more games. I'm hearing Brian Kelly say, we played a lot more games. And I'm hearing Dabo Swinney say, we played a lot more games than Ohio State. So yep. Body of work, and Ohio State's there playing only 6 games. How do you view that conversation when it comes to their ranking and where they are in this semifinal?
See, I think this is a different conversation, and this is where I think I'll piss some people off, which is okay. You know what? I'll ask you this question. And I asked the same thing to Kirk. If you tell me, Kevin Negandhi, if A&M, if Alabama, if Florida, and if Georgia played Ohio State's schedule, would they all be undefeated?
Yes.
Yes. All 4 of those teams, I think, would be undefeated. That's 4 teams. That's 4 teams from the SEC. So, like, I get it. I understand it. And I tell you what, I don't talk to coaches. I don't talk to coaches across the country. I like being at arm's length. I've told you all this before. I don't have connections. I like to be able to say what I feel, and I don't have to worry about anybody's feelings. I had more coaches reach out to me and text me about Ohio State than I could imagine. Like, it was crazy how many people were disappointed, upset, and did not think that Ohio State playing six games merits a invitation into the college football playoff. Like, that's how nuts it got during the process. And by the way, look at the AP voting, by the way. Dabo had him 11. Like, very few coaches across college football in their voting had Ohio State in the top four. You could tell that they understand how hard it is to play games, to win games. And so I think that it's interesting. That's a reasonable debate. And again, if the committee did that and put A&M in there over Ohio State, I would have been okay. Like, it would not have been the end of the world for me, because I would have understand that the Big Ten put them in this position. And by the way, I got to do it, because it's just what it is, what it is. How many times are the Big Ten going to change their rules, for God's sakes? Now we're going to, I guarantee you, by the way, you can put it in stone. Every Ohio State player will be on the field. Every single one, despite protocol, despite anything. I'm in the college football. No. Here's our schedule for college football. Cancel. We're out. We're not revisiting. We're back. We're only going to do X. You have to play a certain number of games. I mean, you talk about mismanaging and screwing up your stuff, bro. They did a phenomenal job of it this year. And the Big Ten, just the conference, listen, we have to do this year by year. It's a year by year conversation. The Big Ten is really bad, really bad. Like, Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, those aren't good at all. They're bad football teams. So naturally, you know, Northwestern's better. You know, Indiana's better. A great, great coaching, great story, awesome program. But like, it's a bad league. And now you're saying you're going to put in a team that only played six games from that league in there, no out of conference. I get the gripe, man. I understand it.
You know, in a year of the pandemic where everything is unknown, it is very crazy about this sport where we deal with cancellations and postponements. But three of the four teams that are in the playoff were basically three of the four teams we could have predicted right after last year's national championship that would be in the playoff, right? And that I think goes into a bigger question about the predictability of the sport and how it feels like there's a certain club to get in, right? When you're at the airport, you want to get in the Admirals Club to go inside there, and nope, you got to stay outside. And there's only a certain invited inside there,
Here's my question to you, though, Kevin. Here's my question to you. I understand exactly what you're saying, but do you disagree with Alabama and Clemson and being in that club?
Not one bit. Do you disagree with
Ohio State being where they're at?
I'm bringing that up into the discussion because of the perception coming into the season that Ohio State is going to be good. And when you look at the talent on the field, you're like, wow, yeah, they're really good. But like you said, coaches being upset and us judging a team after six games. Like,
It was before the season started.
Well, like, exactly.
They had them in the top three before the season started.
And week in and week out, when the committee was having their votes, you know, on Tuesday nights, they did not penalize that Ohio State didn't play enough games. And
Ohio State's they're not a great team. You know, you can spin it however you want. The way they started the season, I thought, dude, I watched Justin Fields and I was like, oh my God, this dude has closed the gap with Trevor Lawrence, who is once one of those players that you go, oh my God, like this dude comes around once every 15 years. And slowly though, now you've seen, whoa, not even close. You know, taking a couple steps back, confused a lot, you know, doesn't know how to get rid of the football, doesn't check the football down like you'd like to, not seeing it the way you would want to. So yeah, I think Ohio State has a lot of talent, but I'll put it to you like this. Ryan Day was telling us before the season that this is the most talented team he's ever seen, even when he was in the NFL. This team isn't even close to as talented as it was a year ago. This team isn't close to the team it was last year. Not even close, bro. And, you know, so they, and here's the thing. I think you can point to the six games and you can go, okay, they only played six games, so they're going to be healthier and fresher. I also don't think they're in any kind of rhythm because nobody's practicing together. Nobody's working together. They haven't played a bunch of games. Like, it looks like it's off rhythm, off kilter. It doesn't look like everybody's in a flow. When you play week after week after week and you get into a season, you get in a lather, bro, you feel really good about it. And you start to know, I start to know exactly where so-and-so is going to be. And I start to know exactly where so-and-so is going to be. And we can just, we ain't even got to communicate. We can just look at each other real quick and we know what we're doing. And Ohio State ain't there yet.
Yeah, and how much do you think, Chris Olave being out, how much do you think that thumb, the questions around the thumb on the throwing hand of Fields played a role here on how he looked? Because there, he never looked comfortable. And we were waiting and watching that game and waiting and saying, when is Ryan Day going to make a full commitment to the running game? Because Northwestern has literally no answer. You're playing into the Northwestern defense by throwing the football. How much do you think that has played a role in field struggles right now?
Here's the way I look at injuries. I don't know what people are going through, and I have a hard time judging people's injuries, right? Like, I don't know the severity. I don't know what they're playing with, but here's what I can tell you. The mistakes I'm seeing aren't physical. The mistakes I'm seeing are mental. So I can judge that, Kevin. Like, I can watch the throw to the flats that he's throwing the ball away, and he throws it right to the daggum Northwestern guy. Like, that's awful. I can watch him not checking the ball down to wide receivers who are wide open, tight ends who are wide open. Like, those are mental decisions that need to be better. So he might not be feeling great physically, but mentally he needs to get his crap together. Like, mentally he needs to get sharper and know what the answers are, so when he sees it, I can get rid of the football. Listen, Trey Sermon's balling. He played great. Rushed for, obviously, over 300 yards. Played wonderful. And Justin Fields can use his legs to get in the mix and make things very difficult on defenses. But if they're going to win a championship, he's going to have to make good decisions in the passing game. And that's what I saw against Northwestern that's very concerning.
And what they're facing now is a team that is completely healthy. A team that has a chip on its shoulder, go figure, that is Clemson, considering their recent dominance in the last few years. But they play with a chip on their shoulder against Notre Dame. Like, hey, everybody's counting us out. And look, we've got everybody back on defense, and we've got 16 doing things. And you slept on 16, or you overlooked 16 because everybody else was playing while 16 was quietly out and recovering from COVID. When you look at this matchup, and a year ago, one of the best football games in recent memory. That Fiesta Bowl was fantastic. The hitting out there was incredible. It's not going to feel that way, I think, in a game like this. Because, like, you brought up a great point that the roster with Ohio State's different. And it's not.
Well, I'll say this real quick, too, though. I think the roster at Clemson is significantly worse, too.
Yes, Clemson. Especially a wide receiver, and you look at certain positions in the secondary.
Offensive line.
I agree. Yes.
Offensive line is, dude, this is Trevor Lawrence cannot win a national championship unless Trevor Lawrence is the best player on the field now. That didn't used to be the case. Trevor Lawrence could throw to Ross and Higgins and Etienne and spread the ball out and stay protected and just ride along for the ride. Like, this isn't the case anymore.
But Trevor Pollock, Lawrence, I will interject that in that Fiesta Bowl, Trevor Lawrence, there were some things that were not working because that Ohio State secondary was really so good. They were really good. And then at a certain point, Lawrence is like, I've got to take control. I've got to run the football a little bit. And he took a nasty hit for him to get back up. To me, he showed me so much metal and toughness to say, I have to be the best player on this team right now and carry us. Right. And,
no,
and
you're right. But I'm just telling you, like, last year, the offensive line was so much more improved. The weapons were so much more improved that he could rely on receivers to win outside consistently for him. And you look at this Clemson offense, like, here I can evaluate Trevor Lawrence from this standpoint. He's big. He's tall. He's fast. He's tough as nails. He's got a howitzer for an arm. The dude can spin it through a car wash and not get it wet. Now, I can't tell you that he's going to be a plug and play phenomenal NFL quarterback because he doesn't throw routes that NFL quarterbacks throw. Like, if you ever watch Trevor Lawrence, he doesn't attack the middle of the field. Like, we don't make reads and throw over safe, over linebackers between safeties. That's Clemson has been a perimeter. My guy's better than yours. I win on the outside, and he throws it from hash to hash, which is NFL-like. Throws deep balls, which is NFL-like. Throws some of the RPO stuff in there a little bit. But, you know, this is just an offense where it's been so – going back to Nuke Hopkins and Sammy Watkins and, like, you could just go – Mike Williams, you can just keep going through the list of wide receivers that have been so ridiculous. That's where there's so much – they've taken a step back big time at that spot now. And they're more human. They're more mortal. So – when I say that, I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence running the football. Like, it's going to be design run after design run. And I'm talking about 10-plus, which, you know, will be in consecutive weeks. You know, he did it in the ACC championship game. You saw he's going to have to do it in this playoff game. He's going to have to do it in the championship if they get to it.
How much will Nolan Turner missing the first half play a role in a game like this? The Clemson safety who was ejected for targeting in the Notre Dame game.
First of all, the rule sucks, bro. And at some point, we got to fix this crap. Like, did you see the hit? You saw the hit. You see it?
Yes, I saw the hit.
Listen,
yes.
So you're telling me Michael Mayer is laying out at 6'5", 260, laying out 4 yards stretched. You're telling me Turner's going to be able to hit that 6-inch target that's a helmet? Like, he didn't launch, by the way. It wasn't a launch. It was helmet to helmet, of course. Yep. But how the heck are you supposed to hit the guy? Like, literally would have had to let him go and just let him fall. Like, I just don't – there needs to be a flagrant one, flagrant two. Think NBA. Like, we need to get this fixed now, immediately, before this does something else stupid in a big game. Flagrant one. It is helmet to helmet, 15-yard penalty. I stay in the game. Flagrant two, that was dirty. I launched. It was a cheap shot. Get the heck out of the game. You're out of here. But – you can't – I just don't understand that part of it. We got to fix that crap. It was by the letter of the law targeting. But it's just we have to be able to measure somewhat and do something with intent. But it's a big loss. When you look at that secondary, you know, he's the QB in the secondary. He's been there the whole season. It's kind of held the secondary together while, you know, he was the only returner. Remember last year he's the one who picked off Justin Fields, by the way, when he was throwing Olave for a touchdown.
In the end zone.
He clinched the game in the Fiesta Bowl. So it's a big loss, man. It's not something they can't overcome because this year, again, this is a year where you've played everybody. Like, you've had so many starting combinations because of COVID and Clemson's cases because of injuries. Like, it's not the end of the world. It's not Armageddon, but it definitely puts a dent in their defense for the first half.
We'll get to Alabama, Notre Dame in a moment, but let's wrap up this matchup talk between Ohio State and Clemson. It was just good to see, if you're a Tiger fan, that Travis Etienne was back on board, right? And against that Notre Dame defense, the one thing that stood out was Clemson's line dictated everything. And then when you have Lawrence and the ability that he can run, it puts that hesitation in pause, and it opens up lanes for ETN. What did you see from ETN that he can carry into this game against Ohio State?
My favorite part is how you said that in the beginning and then how you changed it, because everybody assumes that Clemson, they kicked the crap out of him up front. Nope, that's not what happened. You know what happened? You got a quarterback in there that can make you absolutely suffer and pay. And it makes every angle up front easier on the offensive lineman. It creates hesitation for Notre Dame. That playing downhill, playing fast, it doesn't happen. The backside accounting for a quarterback, it doesn't happen. So you literally take the degree of difficulty for the offensive line. The first time with, you know, Uiagalelei, it was a 10. It was so hard. Everything was so difficult because of all the bodies up near the line of scrimmage. Now, whoa, that dude can kill me with his arm. Like, we got to get a safety out. Boom, get a safety out right now. And now, wait a minute, we're holding the backside end and backside linebacker because Trevor Lawrence can pull it. You just took two people out of the box, like literally. So it's about making it degree of difficulty. Clemson didn't own them up front. They didn't play any different than they did the first time around. But that's how much difference one player makes when you're that kind of good.
Okay. That's why we have you to break it down and give me the proper perspective here. On the other side, what do you make of Notre Dame? Because honestly, I think everybody was a different team. And the one thing that stood out to me in that game in Charlotte was they looked stunned. They looked like they got hit with a 1-2 combination, and this was in the second round, and they had no idea to counter back. How would you assess this? And I will start by talking about Notre Dame's offensive line, which is experienced and has a ton of talent. And Ian Book was running for his life, and they could not run the football with Kyren Williams. What did you see on tape?
Yeah, when you look at the game plan for Clemson, it's frustrating as a defensive lineman because I'm a defensive lineman at heart, obviously. I don't look like one anymore, but I was, I promise. I had the thick neck and all. When you rush the quarterback and you rush a mobile quarterback that makes so many plays outside of the pocket, your rush goes from I'm going to kill the quarterback to I'm taking two or three steps and I'm stopping my pass rush. And that's what Clemson did. Clemson's blitzers, when they blitz guys off the edge, they took two or three hard steps and they sat down and they said, Ian Book, beat me from the pocket. Do it. Go ahead. And by the way, first game, they blitzed. Notre Dame picked up. By the way, Clemson didn't have a bunch of blitzes that came free right away. Look at all those sacks, dude. You know what those sacks were? Ian Book trying to buy time, trying to get outside of the pocket. And Clemson said, nah, brah, sit right there in the pocket. The next step for Ian Book, the part of Ian Book's game that I've always been critical of is, can you make throws on time? Can you go through progressions? He had opportunities to do that in this game. There are people on film that are open. Ian Book has always been and still is to this day a 1-2, boom, I'm gone. And he sets up blocks better than any quarterback I've ever seen. Like, he literally gives him the crossover and fakes like he's going inside and pops out to set up an angle for those offensive linemen. Well, Clemson wasn't having it. They literally kept him in the pocket. They were giving him no outs whatsoever. And they said, if you're going to beat us, it's going to be from right in here. And he couldn't do it. And it's going to require Ian Book to understand what he's seeing quickly, to throw the ball on time, on target. It's going to take him trusting his wide receivers. But, you know, if I'm playing them and I'm Alabama, I'm not changing anything about my game plan. That's exactly what I want him to do. I'm going to keep him in the pocket and say, make your wide receivers beat mine, because his wide receivers have big bodies, mm-hmm. but they don't have a lot of juice. They don't have a lot of wiggle. They're not Devontae Smith, for God's sakes. You know, they don't have that ability to get open on man-to-man coverage. So, you know, that's the beauty of the adjustment for me with Venables. And the thing that changed was, it wasn't that Notre Dame couldn't protect Ian Book, because they did. And Kyren Williams, by the way, still hitting Skowski in the mouth, even though he was in there. Like, what an unbelievable blitz pickup he had a couple times. But they were not rushing with the same style. They changed their style, and Notre Dame didn't have an answer.
You know, when you look at this Alabama team, it's all about offense. Go figure. And I made this mention yesterday that just – Nick Saban in the last 5 years in changing the identity of his program, it's like Tiger changing his swing in the middle of his dominance, aware that, hey, I've got to make adjustments while I'm still on top. And for him to have the mindset of, hey, we're going to be offensive dominant with playmakers everywhere. And instead of just, hey, defense, defense, and more defense. Now, granted, their defense through the years, they're a factory still. But, I mean, Bama gave up 46 points to Florida. And one of the reasons why is mismatches, right? Dan Mullen is very good at creating mismatches. And Florida has the chess pieces for the mismatches.
Yep. And that's, so that's the best point you've ever made. I mean,
keeping that in mind, let's transition here. And what you talked about with Notre Dame, they have the size potentially on the outside, but they don't have the wiggle or the ability to create a lot of mismatches generally. But now you have to find a way to do that, because you have to answer every possession back and forth, because you know Bama's going to put it on the board. So what is this game going to come down to when you look at the chess pieces for Tommy Rees and trying to figure out how he can continue to score matched up against Bama?
Kevin, that's the best point you've ever made. Like, when you look at Florida's offense, you have the ultimate killers. Like, you have, if you play single high, okay, you're done. Pitts beat you. Like, Pitts kills you. Like, the ball's going to Pitts no matter what. It's over. It's a wrap. He can play tight end. He can play wide receiver. Okay, you want to play two deep? Now you're asking your linebackers to play Tony, Kadarius Tony, in the slot. Like, he's basically Allen Iverson just crossing people over left and right. So quick, so fast, good after the catch. Like, and then you got a quarterback who can put it on the money anywhere he wants to put it, that throws to spots and throws 50-50 balls to Pitts and just gets it, knows how to move in the pocket. Like, it's just, it's nuts. It's been crazy to watch that offense evolve from a running quarterback, Dak Prescott, like that's what you think Dan Mullen is, to now spread them out five wide. I'm going to throw it to all my wide receivers and playmakers and make you feel bad. And Grimes, by the way, I didn't even mention. Like, you could go down the list of more guys to mention. But Notre Dame, they're not built like that. Mayer's big, strong, awesome, great young player that's going to be really, really good, but he doesn't have that wiggle that Pitts has to make you miss. Alabama likes more physicality. They like that. That's more their brand. They struggle more with speed and space. Go back to Ole Miss. Like, you saw that, right? Speed, space kills them. So it's Tommy Rees, you know, just maybe go. Maybe is it too late to go to the transfer portal and get Tony and Pitts? Can I do that now? Like, can they go in the transfer portal? It's a year of, you know, hey, this is a crazy year, right? Can I go to the portal?
So is this going to be, I mean, you're looking at some of these early lines, 17 points. Like, blowout.
I'm going to be Murray in that Heisman commercial with the anticipation. I mean, I don't see it. Alabama gets 12 possessions a game, I think is the number.
Yeah.
Kevin, how many times are they not going to score?
You're right. I mean, that first half against Florida, they had the ball six times. They scored five touchdowns. And one of, I think the other one was a turnover. And you're just sitting there and you're like, hey, great for Florida. They got one stop. But this is the reality. I mean, even to the point where when Florida scored to make it 28-17 with 1:10 left in the first half, I was like, that's just too much time. And you're not just like making that comment to just, hey, be funny. Realistically, that's just too much time because you knew Alabama was going to come back and score.
Now, I will say this. Landon Dickerson being out is a huge loss. I think he is the best center in college football. I think he brings a physical element to that offense that just makes them unstoppable. Like, he mauls people, man. I love his mentality, his attitude. Like, he plays with a spirit that's different than a lot of people. Like, you watch people jump off sides and he does that little dance. And I know that sounds stupid, but it matters, man. And I've never seen someone get carted off the field and every single player come touch his helmet. I've never 100%. Seen that in all of my years of college football. Every single Alabama player came over there and was like, dude, I love you. Thank you. Because you don't find people that put their heart and soul in every single play and make you feel them every single play. So that might be a difference maker. That might be something that slows this offense down a little bit. And by the way, we don't even mention, you know, Najee Harris, and we mentioned Devontae Smith and Mac Jones and all this stuff. They just got so many weapons and so much talent. By the way, that being said, it all works because of Sark. I mean, yep. Sark's just, I watch the play designs and I marvel. I really do, man. His brain and his creativity, you don't go three down the list of guys that that I trust more as a play caller. I mean,
let's just bring up some Sark love here too. You tweeted out earlier today, and it was a message to Auburn about Sark. What was the message?
Go get it done. Like, what are we waiting for? We fire Gus Malzahn. We're gonna tinker with Kevin Steele, which I'm not saying Kevin Steele can't do. I think he was 1-30 something in Big 12 play. It was Baylor. Baylor's a hard place to win. I get it. But do you fire somebody? Do you pay 20 something million dollars to hire somebody that's already on staff? I don't think so. You're not going to hire Hugh Freeze, which to me is a home run. would make a ton of sense. That's not going to happen. Okay, I got to hire. If I hire Steve Sarkisian, there is some unknown, by the way. There, as a head coach, as the main guy, there's some unknown, and he's had some difficulties in the past. But I'll say this. I dent my rival, my biggest rival, I dent them big time. I take away, you know, one of the best play callers in all of college football, and I put him on my team. So that's a big plus. And I get an offensive identity and one of the best play callers. Like, I know what I get offensively as opposed to what I've been getting, which has been kind of meh. I mean, like Sark versus Malzahn and Morris, like it's not a debate. Like the creativity, the game planning, the understanding of how to attack matchups, it's night and day different. So it would be a huge coup. It would make sense. I don't know what Auburn's thinking or what direction they want to go, but they need to find offense in the year of 2020. I'm finding an offensive stud, and that to me is the best guy.
So funny you bring up that word stud, because on my colleague on ABC, Mark Sanchez, of course, played for him at USC, and he said that Sark would have his play call sheet, and on the side of the calls, he had another box here that was just labeled FTS, and it was called Feed the Studs. And it was just specifically, he'd go to that because he knew when it was time to feed the ball to the right guys who were the playmakers. And he's just done a tremendous job when it comes to balancing that offense to make sure everybody is fed, right? And that of course, is the outlet through Mac Jones, who's done a great job. But Najee Harris, go figure, I think 10 years ago, Najee Harris wins the Heisman, right? but the way the game has changed, and you look at what he's done, for him to catch three touchdown passes in that game, it just shows you the adjustability to say you're expecting him to carry the football. No, we're going to find a way to get him the ball in space and still beat you without running it. And Sark's just, I think he's a brilliant mind. He's doing fantastic with the weapons that he has. And it would make sense to me if Auburn was looking for, an innovator moving forward, and you want to, of course, have a dent against Alabama, like you mentioned. But there's a handful of other things. Now, when you look at the Clemson-Ohio State game, you've got Bama already now going to the national championship to play January 11th. Clemson-Ohio State will come down to what and who wins.
I'll take Clemson, and it comes down to me, it comes down to the quarterback who can make the most plays. And I don't have any doubt in my mind that it's Trevor Lawrence. It's just, it's amazing. And I don't know if it's because he's 6'5", 6'6". And by the way, just think about this. Trevor Lawrence is built like Peyton Manning. Huge, right? Like big, strong guy. But then he runs like Steve Young, for God's sakes. Like it's a long stride. It's not the same as Steve Young. He doesn't have as much wiggle, but he's so much bigger and stronger. He just falls forward for 4 yards. And so I think it comes down to Trevor Lawrence playmaking ability and his ability to run the football and for them to scheme it. That is the difference. And I know Ohio State's going to make plays. I know Justin Fields can make plays, but to me, I think the best player in that game is going to be Trevor Lawrence. And I think that'll be the difference.
Okay. Looking forward to it. And then I think we'll get, well, I look forward to the games and whatever the outcome, if it goes the way you're predicting, Alabama, Clemson, part
67.
Yeah. 645. Right. And we'll see how that plays out. Let's transition here. And I want to go on a small little rant, because we love the sport.
I like it.
Come back to the sport. It is absolutely ridiculous that a 9-2 Army team is not scheduled to play in a bowl game. There is no excuse from what we've seen and what we've experienced and who's getting, bowl invitations and stuff. I'm not debating anybody else who's getting a bowl bid. There's some issues where I'm like, whoa, that shouldn't happen. But this system has to figure out how to get Army in a bowl game. And, Coach Munkin has talked about, hey, there are teams that are ducking us. He didn't say that specifically, but he said there are teams that are declining invitations or will not play us because they don't want to get prepared for less than a week with what our offense can do. Understood. But we have to figure out something in some way to get
Army on the field to finish off the season the way they deserve to finish off the season. You play 11 games, you win 9 of them. You deserve to play in a bowl game if the players want to play in that bowl game.
100 million percent. Those men represent all that's good about college football. They represent everything that we should point to, everything that we talk about sacrifice and what we've given up this year. Like, it ain't close to what they give up every year. Like, every year, year in and year out, what they do for us. And if they want to play a football game, find a way to make it happen. It shouldn't be that difficult. They should have been thought about waving this up. Like, that should have been taken care of, because it ain't like they stink. It's not a fun system to play against. Everybody hates playing the triple option. It's a difficult thing to play. I get that, but surely we can figure out a way to make this right.
Yeah. And I understand the bowl season starts today. But Jeff Munkin and the Black Knights, they deserve it. And I know as we tape this, there's 16 bowls that have been canceled, and over 20 teams that have opted out. And I know that they had a deal and they thought they had a matchup secured. And it's just it's ridiculous. Somebody in the room, whoever you are, has to step up and say, no, we have to fix this. We cannot let this thing go. We have to fix this in the next couple of weeks. Find a way to get them to play somebody in a bowl. I don't care what the bowl is. They deserve to be in the postseason to play a bowl game. And let's talk about some matchups here. I need to get that off my chest here. But I do want to get your thoughts on Cincinnati and the committee. And just the message that was sent to the group of five. It was, UCF fans are saying, yeah, the message was sent a few years ago. To me, it's ridiculous for them to move just one spot up. They lose a spot for not playing, and they move one spot up. Your thoughts on Cincinnati being shut out and also not even being in the top six?
Start your own playoff. Start your own. Don't listen. You're not invited to this one. Like, it's not set up for you. It would take a mini miracle. You would think a global pandemic would change this, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you still got a 3-loss Florida team in front of you. I mean, 3-loss Florida team. I don't know what else to tell them. Like, all the things that would need to happen. Listen, BYU is set up to play an amazing schedule this year, and they maybe could have done something special if they played an amazing schedule, but it didn't happen. So the only way you're telling me that a non-Power 5 team can get in, like, say Cincinnati, right? Like, let's go Cincinnati. They need to make a statement late in the season. They need some momentum going in. Remember when Houston beat Florida State going into that next season and kind of created some momentum before they upset Oklahoma? Like, you remember that? They created a little bit of talk. It literally would have to be the perfect storm of Cincinnati needs to beat Georgia. Next year, they need to beat their big-time teams. I think they play Ohio State or somebody early in the season that's really, really good. Like, you need to have at least two games against Power 5 teams that are ranked highly and then run the table in your conference to even think about getting, in the four. This is why we should expand, and this isn't the only reason why we should expand, by the way. Like, we need – I know the TV rights and all the crap that goes with this and the money, but – we need to expand the sport next year immediately. Like, we need to get this done because we have more opt-outs than ever. We're going to continue to have more opt-outs in the future. We need as many people in the mix every year as long as possible to give everybody a reason to play for, to keep the excitement level across college football. It's going to make the game better. Like, listen, it might get to Alabama Clemson regardless, and that's okay. But it doesn't matter. Let's bring more people to the party that can have fun throughout the whole season. And listen, my team might not win, and I know that. If I'm Cincinnati, you're not running the table in an 8-team playoff. You're not. Newsflash. You're not going to beat Bama. If you're the 8 seed, you're not going to beat them. But you got a shot. Yeah. You at least are there. You at least get to play and say, what if we do pull this upset? What if we are a little better than you think? So we need to get that done immediately. We need to get that done next season. This offseason, we need to adjust that. And maybe with the Power Five teams taking over power this offseason would be step number one in that direction. But man, it would be awesome to see the non-Power Five continue to play Power Five, but then have their own playoff where you and me would be tuned in. Everybody would be watching across the country.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I wish they expanded. Eight teams to me is the perfect sweet spot. If you want to go six, I'll take six. But eight teams, you get five automatic bids as well as one group of five automatic, and then you could look at two at large bids. And,
Did you hear what I said on game day? By the way, how to fix it?
No, what'd you tell me?
Okay, take away divisions, Kevin. No more divisions in college.
I'm with you on that. Yes.
Okay. Take away division. But every Power Five league, Kevin, has to play eight conference games and then four out of conference. Okay. Those out of conference games, Kevin, consist of SEC has to play ACC, Big Ten, Pac 12, Big 12. You have to play one team from each conference. So now we have cross conference in every conference by every team. So we have a true indication of who actually is the best conference. Like, we have so many measuring sticks against other conferences every year that we have a really good idea. It takes out the eye test as much. Like, more of, wait a minute. Okay, we have these data points where we saw you beat X. We saw you beat Y. And then you have automatic bids for all the conferences. So that's five. And then you got three at-large bids where you can take the next three best teams that had – you know, great season in whatever capacity you want to take them. Like, to me, does that not make total sense to get a better barometer of who actually are the best teams in conferences?
I'm with you immediately on getting rid of divisions because, for example, Texas A&M, you could win all your games and lose to Alabama, and there's no shot you're going to get the chance to go to the SEC championship game, right? And if the conference championship is going to determine it, you know, whether you're going to get in or not to the playoff, you need to legitimately get the chance to maybe get the top two teams in every conference to face off, like the Big 12, right? So A&M already beat Florida head-to-head, so A&M then will play Alabama again in a rematch in the SEC championship game.
No. Nope.
So I'm with you on that.
And it really makes it a 16-team playoff, by the way. Like, really, you're going to get conference championship games that are going to be elimination games, which are going to be outstanding.
Absolutely. I'm completely with you on that. Let's wrap up here because I do want to get your thoughts on the New Year's Six matchups. And, well, A&M, North Carolina, I love the juiciness of that matchup just because Mac and his Texas ties gets the face-off against A&M. Oregon getting in, taking on Iowa State. When I say getting in, because of how the Pac-12 played out and how they beat USC. Cincinnati versus Georgia. And Oklahoma versus Florida. Any of those games that stand out when you look at the matchups?
So how about the reason Notre Dame goes to the college football playoff over A&M is the North Carolina win. And now A&M plays North Carolina.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is majestic. Like, I think it's so great. A&M obviously going to be upset they didn't get in. I agree they're upset, but okay, now go take it out on the team that helped get them there and beat them, and we'll see the measuring stick of how bad you beat them compared to how bad Notre Dame beat them. So that game comes off the board quick. Florida-Oklahoma, I think, is awesome. That's amazing. That game, to me, is going to be fun. We'll get a sneak peek of how good Oklahoma's defense has become because they're going to get tested by Florida, and then Cincinnati having an opportunity to go prove it. Cincinnati is going to be motivated. Like, there ain't no denying that. They'll be there. They won't have opt-outs. You already got opt-outs from Georgia, but I can't wait to see that defense versus JT Daniels and, you know, the future Georgia offense, which we think they're going to become is, you know, more spread or more attacking, more aggressive, you know, more shots and stuff like that against Cincinnati. So there's some dream matchups, man. That's the fun part of this. It's not just about, to me, the top four. It's fun to look at the other matchups.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And listen, man, the light is at the end of the tunnel, and it's been a long ride. And I want to wish you and the family a great Christmas and a happy holiday to all the people that are listening we do appreciate it week in and week out, you joining us, because listen, we were doing some stuff in June saying, are we going to have a season, right, Pollock? And talking to coaches and what we're dealing with. And now as we approach the final weeks here of 2020 and talking about a playoff and talking about a national championship and talking about controversy in the selection process, there is some sense of normalcy that we get to have on Saturday.
I thought Dabo said it great, man. It's pretty cool that we're at the end of the tunnel and we're talking about all this stuff and all this hope. And we had the whole season. And by the way, how many people it took to get to this point, like all the team managers and trainers and all those people that had to get tested at nauseam, that had to sacrifice these players that had to sacrifice their social life and, you know, their outlets off the field, that they usually have to kind of get over, you know, the season, the mental grind of the season. So a lot have been put into it and now we're at the end and you got bowl season and just definitely thankful everybody that helped make it happen and glad to be a part of it.
Good stuff, brother. Be well. I hope family time is going to be great and we'll catch up soon, leading, of course, to the playoff.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas.
And that'll do it here for this college football podcast on a Monday. And good stuff from Pollock, of course, as he gave us his thoughts on the two games that are coming up on New Year's Day and some strong opinions when it comes to, you know, tweaking the playoff and adding more slots. Hopefully down the road, that is something that comes into play. And a big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk, who's always holding it down for us throughout the season, as well as the off season. Taylor, always doing a great job. And whatever you celebrate during this holiday season, I hope it's a great time. And you guys are rewarded with the gifts that you always wanted. For us, it's just more football and fingers crossed in the next couple of weeks as the end is almost near here in a season that that we will never forget. If you want more football, social distance, wear a mask, stay safe, take care.